Our host needs no introduction.
His name is...
A name so simple it rolls right off your tongue.
His name is James... No, his name is... James Lawrence! Lawrence! Lawrence!
Try again.
Forrest Lone... Lars! Lars!
No! Chuck Jaffe.
Yes! 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 We're like this!
I'll say it again so you remember, okay? This is Money Life with Chuck Jaffe.
Wow! 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 All I can say is wow!
Please do not overdramatize these proceedings.
And now, here's Chuck.
He's one in a million.
He sure is.
Good morning, and welcome to Money Life for April the 21st. I'm Chuck Jaffe, senior columnist for MarketWatch, host of this show every weekday. Excited by what I've got today, excited by what I got for you tomorrow as well. And I know what's coming tomorrow and Monday, and those interviews are all good because they're all done. Because, well, shortly after you get this, sometime today, I will be heading down to North Carolina to watch my daughter, Whitney, who is getting to senior day. It is impossible for me to believe that my youngest daughter is a college senior and that her lacrosse career is coming to an end. Now, you know that I'm very involved in the game and the sport, and I do all those things, and that's not changing, but it is still, wow. It is impossible for me to believe that really there may not be any more games where I get to watch her, because trust me, as much as I love the game, love playing it, love watching it, love broadcasting it, love officiating it, everything else, the most fun has been watching my daughter play. And she's been having a very good season, even though the team has been very challenged this year by some things that were off the field. She's been having a very good season, and it has been fun watching every step of the way. But apparently we're getting to the last step. And that is bittersweet, but that's part of what we deal with. What is not bittersweet is the lineup we've got for today's show. So let me tell you what's coming on today's show. We start with Tom Lydon in for the ETF of the week. Then Alan Gale from Ridgeworth Investments. He joins us for our big interview. After which, Bob Powell stops by for Senior Focus. And then the Money Life Market Call with Todd Rosenbluth. Speaking of college, Todd and I attended the same one, not at the same time, but we are both Michigan grads, and he joins us here as he says he's usually happy to help out a former Wolverine, a fellow Wolverine. I am too, although I have to say I still feel that when he called me out for the ice bucket challenge, that was kind of Wolverine on Wolverine crime. We're not supposed to do that. So Todd will be in. We'll be talking ETFs with Todd. Now, we have great things planned tomorrow. When I'm away, that show's going to be done in advance. I appreciate those of you who say, hey, Chuck, you're allowed to take, you know, you're allowed to take a vacation day or what have you. And I probably will around my daughter's graduation in a couple of weeks. But we were able to get everything done for Friday and even for Monday. Now, Friday's show, we got a big interview with John Kalamos. At 75, John Kalamos just stepped down as the chief executive officer at Kalamos Investments. He is still the co-chief investment officer for the Kalamos Funds. He's still chairman of the company. He's been doing this for 40 years. We're going to have some fun chatting with him on tomorrow's show. Also tomorrow, a really interesting interview with Helen Davis Chapman. She is the author of a book called J.P. Madoff, The Unholy Alliance Between America's Biggest Crook and America's Biggest Bank. Yeah, it is a controversial book, but it is one that, you know, it's worth talking about, and it's going to put me in an odd position. I can promise you this, because in the interview, I kind of had to play not really a true devil's advocate, but there are a lot of people who question some of this. We'll talk more about that on tomorrow's show, but that's part of what's coming. And next week, when we get back to live action and everything else, well, we got some great stuff planned. How about Barry James from the James Advantage Funds, or Peter Tuz from Chase Investment Counsel, and much, much more. Lots of good people coming. We are filling things up in terms of our calendar, and it is a good thing. I'm Chuck Jaffe, senior columnist for MarketWatch, host of this show every weekday. You'll find my work online at marketwatch.com. Probably going to have a column going up today. If you want to know for sure, follow me on Twitter at MKTWJaffe. If you want to know what's going on in the show, well, follow us at Money Life Show. Better yet, go to our website. It's MoneyLifeShow.com. And don't be shy about sending us questions, comments, and much, much more. We would love to hear from you. Money Life itself is independent personal finance talk. We look at a wide range of approaches and opinions on investing. Some stuff that I like, some stuff that I agree with, some stuff that I practice, and some stuff that I don't like, that I don't agree with, and that I would never practice. And that's because disagreement makes a market, and there is no one right way. You'll never hear me say, ooh, well, whatever I do, that's the right way to do this, and that's the only way to do this. I don't believe that. I don't. We can all cross the finish line and be successful at this. There are a lot of common steps that we're going to take, potentially, but we don't have to invest the same way. We don't have to have the same risk tolerance and the same ideas, because we don't. And this show is about finding your place amid the disagreements that make a market. Now it's time for my rules. I'm not allowed to make any new moves in securities we talk about on this show for 15 trading days after they're discussed. Anything I buy for my own portfolio must be held for a minimum of 6 full months, and I'm not allowed to sell anything short. And if anything I own happens to come up in conversation, well then, I'll disclose it, and we'll make sure that you are aware of my potential conflict of interest, and I try to make sure that my guests do the exact same thing. All right, with all that out of the way, let's get busy, because we have a lot to get to. Again, Tom Lydon starts things off, then Alan Gale from Ridgeworth, then Bob Powell, leading on to the market call with Todd Rosenbluth from S&P Capital IQ. We'll get things rolling with the ETF for the week when Money Life picks up speed, right after this message.
Looking for alternative ETF strategies? Direction provides separate and distinct audiences with flexible investment tools to manage risk and execute short-term strategies. For more information, go to directionshares.com.
Tom Lydon joins us now for the ETF of the week on Money Life. Tom, of course, is the editor at ETF Trends. If you want more information, ETFtrends.com. And the site doesn't just include things on what Tom likes and what is trending now. It's everything you need to know about ETF investing, from what's new to what's different, what's opening, what's shutting down, and much, much more. It's ETFtrends.com. They're on Twitter at ETFtrends. Tom's on Twitter at Tom Lydon. But right now, Tom is here. Tom Lydon, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chuck. It's great to be back.
Our ETF of the week is
the Energy Select Sector Spider Fund, ticker symbol XLE.
The XLE, the Energy Select Sector Spider. Energy. Now, we always talk about 200-day moving averages. And that typically means things have to be above their 200-day moving average, which means they have to be going up. Intuitively, energy right now doesn't feel so trendy to me. So why is it trendy to you?
It doesn't, Chuck. It doesn't feel trendy. But you know what? Things have been so bad for so long in the energy sector that, guess, when no one was paying attention, that 200-day average continued to decline, where just in the last week, energy, and specifically this ETF, has gone above its 200-day average for the first time since the fall of 2014.
Wow. Wow. So this is one of those cases where, as a trend follower, you can buy into the dips and hope that maybe good things happen, or is there something else to it?
No, that's absolutely it. Nobody wants to catch a falling knife. And I think a lot of people have felt in the energy and the oil-related sectors, it's just been brutal. However, since February, hitting those lows, we've seen a 25% increase in the overall energy sector as far as its value. And when you look at this ETF, it hit almost a price of $50 a share. Now it's up above $24 a share. Pretty good increase off the bottom, but back 18 months ago, it was trading over 100. So you have to look at the trends. Energy is a huge component of the S&P 500. Energy is a huge component of our overall GDP. It's something that we're not going to get rid of anytime soon. However, if you were looking to maybe go into an area that maybe has been beaten up, if you are a trend follower, if you're looking for specific representation within the energy sector, this ETF is the largest out of all the energy-related ETFs out there, one of the first that was available by State Street and the Spider Group. So it's something to consider. Even though we've had some news recently that we don't necessarily have an agreement as far as where oil prices will go, it appears when you see even a weekend that we've seen where we don't have a consensus, but come Monday, energy prices are up over 1%. I think that the market is telling us that we might have reasons to be a little bit more optimistic.
So we've got reason to be more optimistic. Is this a pure 200-day moving average play, meaning we're buying it right now, and if we see any sort of reversal, if we wind up seeing something happening with Doha or any of the other things that could come in and affect oil and energy and wind up affecting the ETF, if this trip above the 200-day moving average is a short one, we're back out again, or not?
No, I think you're absolutely right. Most people, in their portfolio, whether they're buying diversified ETFs or diversified mutual funds, have an energy component, just by default. So there are a lot of investors who have ridden energy down for the past couple of years. However, if you have money that you have available, whether it's new money that you've put into your portfolio, or maybe some areas that have been unloved that you've sold, and you do have cash available, number one. And number two, you've got the time and the discipline to follow trends, this isn't something that you might consider. So for long-term buy and hold investors, it really doesn't make a difference because you probably already have energy. If you do have cash available and you're looking for a new trend to identify, a new trend to follow, this is something that you might look at. I think a lot of us in the market are always looking for opportunities that might have been beat up. You look for trends that maybe have been down for 2 years, and maybe for the first time in a while, it's above its trend line. So it requires discipline. You got to pay attention. And this thing could reverse very, very quickly. But trend following is fantastic as long as you're on it. And ETFs provide that opportunity to follow trends just like this.
From the perspective of an investor who does not have a dedicated piece to energy, who instead maybe holds the S&P or something along those lines where they're going to have exposure to the Exxons and the Chevrons and et cetera. Do they take a little piece of their diversified S&P type money and throw it at this point and slide back over if it goes out of the 200-day moving average? Or is this, as you pointed out, for somebody more who has a little bit of cash to invest, you're putting that cash to work?
I think it has to be black and white, Chuck. Either you're a long-term investor and you've held energy all the way down, and now hopefully this reversal is the beginning of a new long-term uptrend, or you're opportunistic. You spend a little bit more time on your portfolio. You're okay in looking at charts. You've got the discipline to not only be able to buy, but also the discipline to be able to sell. It's a very, very classic example of testing yourself to say, hey, listen, I want to be more opportunistic. I like what we're seeing out there. I like the movement in energy companies right now with oil where it is. I don't think we're going to go back to $25 a barrel. I think we're going to push more towards $50 a barrel. You may see some opportunity here, but it's not one of those things where you can take a significant portion of your portfolio, push it over into XLE, and then forget about it because, like most sectors, they have their volatile periods.
It is the XLE. The Energy Select Sector Spider, the ETF of the week from Tom Lydon. Above the 200-day moving average, worth taking a look at now. For more information, go to ETFtrends.com on Twitter, at ETFtrends. Tom, thanks as always.
Thanks, Chuck.
Of course, if you want to follow Tom on Twitter, he's at Tom Lydon. Now, following Tom is a tough act, but that's what we've got to do next. The big interview, that's what's coming after Tom Lydon and after this message.
At Hightower, providing the best fiduciary advice to every advisory client is not just a job, it's a legal duty. Sophisticated asset management, lifetime financial planning and wealth management solutions. At Hightower, it all adds up to peace of mind. Visit HightowerAdvisors.com to learn more about the Hightower difference.
Let's face it, size matters.
Truly epic proportions.
Especially when it comes to your financial talk.
I have a plan.
Quick sound bites and rush chatter won't help you.
Blah, 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 blah.
You want more details, more depth.
Concentrate, focus power.
More to think about.
What do you think?
This is Money Life's Big Interview.
I think it's brilliant.
A meaningful conversation on money and markets.
This is why we're here.
So settle in.
I made you coffee.
You're going to be here a while.
Big interview time here on the April 21st edition of Money Life, and I'm joined right now by Alan Gale, Senior Investment Strategist and Director of Asset Allocation for Ridgeworth Investments. If you want more information on the firm, you want to see commentaries that some of their experts do and more, go to Ridgeworth.com. They're on Twitter at Ridgeworth. Alan Gale, welcome back to Money Life.
Thank you for having me.
Alan, I'm really excited to have you on the show because we have you on every couple of months. And the last time we had you on, well, the market was sort of getting through the throes of a terrible start to the year. It's had a strong rebound. At the same time, I have seemed to have more guests on the show of late who are coming up with reasons for people to be nervous, panicky. You know, it's been the new case for gold. It's been what's wrong with money and all of these other sorts of things. And they all say that, okay, the rally that we've seen, that's not a real rally. And the rebound, that's not a real rebound, that there's trouble coming. So when you look at it, did we flush the trouble that was coming back in January at the start of the year and things are good now? Or are you worried about the storm clouds too?
Well, you know, it's when I manage my Ridgeworth allocation strategies, we're always looking at valuations, and we're looking at the macro environment, and we're looking at market momentum. And I think perhaps a lot of your guests have been looking at market momentum, and they've been saying from a technical standpoint, we've been experiencing a weak market for a number of months. And so the question is, have we broken out of it yet? And I would say that, you know, from my analysis, I think that we are right at that threshold. So I'm going to speak with two hands this morning, and say that there's a, we are clearly, I guess in my mind, I'm cautiously optimistic. I think from an economic standpoint, some of the issues that we've been worrying about that have been weighing on earnings appear to be resolving themselves, or at least dissipating. Let me give you three examples. One of them has to do with something I've been watching for a number of months, and that's the manufacturing sector. We saw a buildup in inventories in 2015. I think the manufacturing sector was soft all of last year. I have been and remain under the opinion that businesses are going to navigate their way through the soft patch without having to resort to high levels of layoffs and plant closures. And I'm looking at the regional surveys that we're getting from various Federal Reserve banks, mm-hmm. and we're getting some encouraging news. Production is up, orders are up, and it looks like inventories are down. So that's a big positive that suggests that the economy is not going to go into recession and that we're going to garner some new traction. The second item has to do with the value of the dollar. We know that the dollar surged 25%, but after it did that, it's basically been in a trading range, and we're at the lower end of the trading range now. Some of the same technicians that you may be talking to may be saying that the dollar may be in a bear trend for now, in which case all that's good for multinational earnings. The third factor is oil prices. We had the sharp drop in oil prices, and lately, we've seen some good stability, and that suggests that the strains on the energy sector and the high yield market may also be dissipating. So I'm seeing light at the end of the tunnel. I don't think we're out of the tunnel yet. I think there's still some risks out there, but I have not gone underweight equities in here. One last comment I will say is that using our analysis with the Ridgeworth allocation strategies, We did add notably to gold miners back in January, and so we've been really pleased with that rotation because we've been out of that sector for 3 years.
And out of curiosity for my audience, why miners instead of holding the metal itself?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. One of them is that we knew that the mining sector, the miners themselves, have been going through a difficult patch. And so it's easier to identify business models that have gone through some stress and then correction. The second factor is that you get more, I guess, bang for the buck with miners than you do with the metal. You also get a dividend with the miners that you don't get with the metal. And, you know, thirdly, in the allocation strategies, we don't use investments that involve options and that kind of thing, or what our compliance people call bad income. So structurally, we stay away from those as well. But there's a good business reason why we go with gold miners versus gold.
What about the potential for the election to be a storm cloud for you? I mean, we really haven't seen a lot of the election priced into the market yet, have we?
I think, yeah, the election has been, let me just kind of make two comments. I guess one, my grandmother always taught me, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. So that may limit my comments, but I'm going to try and venture forward anyway. There's a lot of concern about the candidates that are out there and actually what they stand for. So it's very difficult on the Republican side to figure out what's the policy implication on the Democratic front. How far are they going to go to the left? Generally, there's a feeling that regardless, there's probably going to be an increase in taxes no matter what. So this has the potential to weigh on the market, particularly as we go into the summer months, which tend to be seasonally weak to begin with. But I just wanted to mention an interesting analysis that was done, and I give the Stock Traders Almanac credit for this one. This is an interesting election year because we are finishing up with an eighth year of a presidential term. And typically, in an average election cycle, you will find the S&P 500 will go through some rough patches, but it'll probably rise about 6% or 7%, which is a normal annual gain according to history. The interesting thing is that if you look at the eighth year of a presidency, those that have been reelected, the market tends to go down, the S&P tends to go down 11% according to the study, and the Dow tends to go down almost 14%. So mm-hmm. When you've got two fresh candidates and the loss of a known quantity, that just adds another element of uncertainty to the market, which I do not view as positive.
That being the case, do we wind up having to dodge some sort of bullet? How does that play out? I mean, it's not a positive, but at some point we're going to have a better idea of who the candidate's going to be, what the policies are going to be, and what that actually means. Does that mean that as we get into this election year, and you mentioned Stock Traders Almanac, Jeff Hirsch has been on this show and has talked about how he thinks this may be the year that kind of breaks the standard cycle. Do you think that there is some measure of significant event risk regarding the election, as in, hey, we got to the convention and this is what somebody said, and all of a sudden we go, oh my goodness, this is what we're facing, and the market just takes a tank?
I think there is a real risk on that, in that, you know, we know that the healthcare industry, particularly the big pharma companies, as well as the financials, are in the political crosshairs. I don't see any of that changing as we go forward. You know, could we see some announcement related to energy? I think that's very possible. You know, if we you know, we could have a bombshell on trade. And, you know, in which case you have the risk that you're going to hit some of the multinational firms. So yeah, there's a real risk that, you know, one of these candidates or both of the candidates could end up bombing Wall Street with some of their policy suggestions.
Let's turn away from the political outcomes here. You know, we started this year with a Fed that was looking at 4 rate hikes. They're not looking at 4 anymore. Are you looking at the Fed and thinking that the Fed has done a really nice job of making sure that, hey, just when everybody else and all the other central banks were looking to be more accommodative, no, keep it that the U.S. is still the main story? Or are you looking at this as the Fed has done a lot of things that ultimately create trouble down the line?
Well, I think, you know, there was a forecasting chicken contest. And I think, you know, the market was saying that there, and the market continues to say that there's unlikely to be any rate hike before December. And even so, the risk of that would be no better than a coin toss. While the Federal Reserve had 4 rate hikes built into their scenario, in March, they cut the number of expected rate hikes from 4 to 2. So I would say that the Fed blinked in that regard. But, you know, Janet Yellen says all the time, she mentions this dual mandate that the Fed has, whereas other central bankers generally have just an inflation, single inflation mandate. She says, we've got this dual mandate, and I'm looking at it. We've got the unemployment rate below 5%, so that was kind of hitting their threshold. The inflation data, as I see it, looking at the CPI and the various components in there, I think that there is a very strong likelihood that we're going to be at or above 2% by the end of this year, just looking at the components of the CPI that are already above 2%, areas like healthcare, areas like housing and the like. So, but what the Federal Reserve has done is this dual mandate plus one, which is the rest of the world. And I think they're using it as something of a fudge factor. They're nervous about things. They want to make sure they don't move too quickly. Having said that, what we've seen is this dual mandate plus one has actually put downward pressure on the dollar. So we were all worried about the Fed raising interest rates and that spiking the dollar and putting more pressure on multinational companies in Wall Street. And it looks like this tentativeness that we're seeing has actually had the reverse effect. So my opinion is that the Federal Reserve probably needs to actively consider nudging up interest rates. I'm thinking we'll see a good 2 rate hikes this year. And I actually think that the April meeting is going to be a live meeting where there's going to be a lot of arguing back and forth about why they delayed raising interest rates before. And they'll probably set the stage for a June rate hike.
Alan, I wish we had more time because I've got more questions. We don't have more time. So we're just going to have you back on the show in the not too distant future.
Sounds good to me.
Alan Gale from Ridgeworth Investments, where he is Senior Investment Strategist and Director of Asset Allocation. For more information, go to Ridgeworth.com, on Twitter, at Ridgeworth. We're halfway through today's show, but halfway means there's much more to come. Up next, Senior Focus with Bob Powell, and then the market call. Stay tuned.
Customize an investment portfolio with FlexShares, ETFs designed to pursue targeted goals and to adapt to changing market conditions with both equity and fixed income solutions. For more information, go to FlexShares.com.
Your retirement years are coming. Are you financially ready for your retirement?
You know, I've been thinking.
Oh, that would explain the beads of sweat.
Don't let this happen to you.
I'm afraid it's just not sufficient to refinance your home.
Where shall I go? What shall I do?
My advice to you, start drinking heavily.
Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen. I think something is happening.
Bob Powell knows where to turn and how to help you with your financial needs as you plan for or live in retirement.
Here I come to save the day.
It's all here as Retirement Weekly's Bob Powell joins Money Life every week for Senior Focus.
Senior citizens, although slow and dangerous behind the wheel, can still serve a purpose.
Bob Powell joins us now for Senior Focus. Bob, of course, is the editor at Retirement Weekly. He is a columnist for Market Watch in the Retire Mentors section. You can find his work there. And when you find his columns, you'll find links to Retirement Weekly. because that is also a Market Watch product. You can also follow Bob on Twitter, where he's at RJPIII. Bob, welcome back to the show.
Chuck, thanks for having me on.
You get to see, I think I see a lot of studies between the show and my job, but you get to see some of the coolest research, and you've got some more of it these days.
I do. So Olivia Mitchell, who is at the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School and is head of the Pension Research Council, she and her colleagues, co-authors, have published two papers that I think are really interesting. And they point out, in essence, when and how to delegate the investment management or the management of your investments to an advisor. And they look at three types of ages: young, when you're first entering the career, your job; middle aged, and older, when you're on the retirement doorstep and into retirement. And they look at outcomes: if you were to do it yourself and just buy and hold, versus buying a target date fund, and then how life would turn out if you used an investment advisor to manage your money. And what they discovered is a couple interesting things from my perspective. One is that they suggest that when you're young and just starting out, even though you may not have any money, it is probably better to turn over the management of your investments to an advisor. And that's better than picking the target date fund, and which is better than doing nothing. And the reason that they say it's better to turn over the management of your investments to an advisor when you're young is that it's an opportunity cost. That if you're young and you need to acquire job-specific skills and learn new knowledge to help you, you know, get ahead in your job, increase your salary, increase your lifetime earnings, that any extra time that you have would be far better spent investing in your human capital, right, getting ahead, increasing your potential earnings potential, than it would be learning how to invest. And that the overall percent betterment that you would get is about 1%. Now, she says that may not sound like much, but who wouldn't, at the end of the day, want 1% more in income and 1% more in wealth, all things being equal? So I think the takeaway for me is that if you're young and just starting out and you think you can't afford an advisor, that may or may not be the case. But don't do nothing. And if you have to do something, get a target date fund. And if possible, maybe consider robo-advice, because she says that's probably, all things being equal, just as good as having a human advisor. And if need be, get a human advisor, because that will help you. That'll give you the time that you need to invest in your career versus spending that time investing in your investments.
And, I mean, ultimately, this is not something that really surprises us. We always know, all the surveys wind up saying, hey, you're better off if you get advice, you're better off if you have a plan, all those other sorts of things.
Yep.
At the same time, you'd like to think that people would take surveys like this and go, okay, this is why, as an employer, I need to give not just the ability to, like, oh, you can have target date funds, but you can get financial planning, you know, let's make it accessible as a benefit of work or something along those lines. And there still isn't enough of that, is there?
No, there's not enough of that. And I'm hoping, you know, we are on the advent of seeing all these financial wellness programs come into play. We're looking at incentives being offered to employees who do certain behaviors at work. So I think the time will come where advice, especially to young employees, will be somewhat universal and maybe even standardized in some ways. The other part of the research that she showed was, while when you're in your middle ages, you may not benefit as much from having an advisor as you will when you're younger, but you especially might need one when you're older, and when you're on the retirement's doorstep and you need to start thinking about withdrawal strategies, or you need to think about the possibility of cognitive decline, having an advisor then will also benefit you rather than spending your time managing your money, which, among other things, could, you know, eat into your leisure time, which is, you know, goes back again to the opportunity cost. The opportunity cost for everyone is, at least at the among the older folks, would be, if you're retired, your leisure time. So do you want to spend your leisure time managing your money, or do you want to spend it, you know, with the grandkids and gardening and traveling and whatnot? So, and, you know, and obviously, if you're managing your money and you're suffering from cognitive decline, that's not probably so great for your portfolio either.
In the end, do we come through research like this and say, it just confirmed what we already knew? Do we come through research like this and say, damn it, this is the push that you have to have?
Well, I kind of look at it this way. I think people always think about when and how should I pick an advisor? Is there a good time for me to think about hiring one? And at least this gives you, I think, some guidelines about when and how to use one. So if you're young or old, certainly a good time to use an advisor or target date fund or a robo-advisor. If you're middle-aged and you don't need to acquire job-related skills because you're in your peak earning years and you really don't need to acquire new knowledge or skills, and you have the time. And here's the other important thing I think, Chuck, about this research is what it suggests is, and I pose this question to Olivia, you know, on the one hand, we keep telling people that they're financially illiterate and that, you know, if they turn over the management of their money to an advisor, they may be giving up that chance to learn about how to invest. And I think that's the balance that people will need to strike. At a minimum, she says, you know, understand interest rates and inflation and diversification. And when you get to your middle ages, when you have more time to think about investing, then, you know, become more financially literate then. It's not an either or that you give up financial literacy by giving away the investment management portion and, you know, investing in your career. It's a blended life cycle here.
Mm-hmm. We know how to get through from one phase to the next. That's because we turn to you for advice. As we get into the phase that says you're supposed to be in your golden years, we're looking for you for help, Bob. That's what we do at Senior Focus. Thanks so much for joining me on Money Life.
Thanks, Chuck, for having me. Talk to you next week.
Bob Powell is the editor at Retirement Weekly. If you want to get more of his insights, go to MarketWatch.com and find him in the Retire Mentors section where he writes a column. But if you really want to dig in and make sure that you're doing all the right things and you understand everything that's coming up that might bite you or might prepare you, well, then learn more about Retirement Weekly. Up next, the Money Life Market Call. Todd Rosenbluth from S&P Capital IQ when Money Life continues in just a moment.
Independent and advisor-owned, Hightower ensures that best-in-class financial product and service providers compete for your business every day, a groundbreaking model that's making waves on Wall Street. Discover what Hightower can do for you at HightowerAdvisors.com.
It's hard to know what to do next in the stock market.
Where am I? What am I doing here?
That's because one expert's rally is another's prelude to a correction.
Of course, people do go both ways.
One manager's buy is another man's sell.
Have you come to any conclusions yet?
Each day, the Money Life Market Call brings you a different expert's take on where to invest and what to avoid.
Now listen, Grapehead, I'll explain it so even you can understand it.
Just as important, you'll find out the reasons behind that thinking, and that should make your next financial decisions easier and smarter.
We do have a system, and it works.
It's the Money Life Market Call. Now.
The only reason we're here is to make catty observations and rude remarks. And there was nothing good on TV.
It's Money Life Market Call time, and I'm joined now by Todd Rosenbluth, Director of ETF and Mutual Fund Research for S&P Capital IQ. If y'all want more information, capitaliq.com, at Todd SP Cap IQ is his Twitter handle, at SP Capital IQ is the firm's Twitter handle. And of course, Todd, among other things, is a member of the fraternity that I belong to. We're both graduates of the University of Michigan, which is one more reason why I'm happy to say. Todd Rosenbluth, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chuck. Good to be with you, and go blue.
Even though it's sort of the time when we don't have to worry a whole lot about that, right? You know, these days you say go blue for like softball. But
yeah, I know. Spring is a good time when everybody, Big Ten or non-Big Ten, can all get together and say it's you know, we got time to just relax and look within our portfolios and see if what we're holding is a good investment.
That's it. And do it now, because come fall when it's football season or it gets into basketball season, you're just not going to want to take the time off. So let's talk about how you guys evaluate funds and ETFs at S&P Capital IQ, because methodology comes in first before we can ever get to what you like or dislike.
And that makes sense. Look, if you're going to use our investment ideas, you have to know where we're coming. So what we do is start with the underlying holdings of a ETF or a mutual fund. And let's focus on the ETF portion, I guess, for now. So we look at the underlying holdings from a valuation and risk perspective, offer an opinion of those holdings as we do from an individual stock angle of it. And then we combine our analysis of those holdings with ETF level attributes. So the bid-ask spread, the expense ratio, how the ETF is trading
from a technical perspective, and overall combine that into a ranking, either overweight, which is what we like, underweight, which we don't like, or market weight, which is the middle area of what that is. Coverage is about 1,100 equity and fixed income ETFs, updated on a daily basis, and the research is available on a number of self-directed platforms that many of your listeners probably have access to.
So ultimately, what we're really doing is we're leveraging S&P Capital IQ's stock analysis to say, what does somebody hold?
Yes, and whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing, and then combining that with things that are easier to, that are more factual in nature. So the expense ratio of an ETF is not our opinion. It's the expense ratio. How it's trading is just factual information, but we're combining those things. So we're putting forward our analyst's best ideas, combining that with an index-based approach.
Do you ever get into how the indexes are constructed and all those other sorts of things? I mean, if you're looking at the underlying securities and we're judging all the new products that are coming out in ETF land, where it's smart beta this and, you know, active ETF that and what have you, how often do you look and say, okay, well, you know, by hook or by crook, by luck or by skill, they somehow have managed to have a decent portfolio. But when I look at this, I'm kind of going, I don't like the construction.
Yeah, so that's we're doing that on a regular basis, either in the rankings that we have or in the commentary that we also publish that is also available on many of these platforms. But it's quite common that ETFs that sound the same are out there, and you could talk about some of the smart beta ones, you know, SPLV, which is the PowerShares Low Volatility ETF, and USMV, which is the iShares Minimum Volatility ETF. They both sound like they're accomplishing the same thing, looking for low-risk stocks and putting them in a portfolio. But their construction is quite different. The PowerShares product, SPLV, is the least risky stocks within the broader index, whereas USMV is the least risky stocks within a sector within a broader index. And as such, you're going to get, you know, pure low volatility stocks within SPLV, but you're going to get more sector diversification within USMV. And that really comes down to what matters more to the end user. But we comment on that on a regular basis. We happen to like both those ETFs. They both earn a top ranking over overweight to us, but for slightly different reasons, since the portfolio is quite different.
Okay. So you just mentioned an issue that sort of stands out to you. What are others that stand out to you based on what you see happening right now? I mean, what are the areas of the market that look good? What are the areas of the market that you can't stomach?
Yeah, I mean, so from an investment perspective, you know, we are believers that that the economy is growing. We like some of the more economically sensitive sectors. So technology is one of the areas within the S&P 500 that we happen to like. The pure way of getting, or the large cap exposure way of getting that is XLK, which is the technology sector spider and gets you exposure to, you know, to Apple and Facebook and Alphabet, you know, what formerly was called Google, among other companies. We think that those stocks are undervalued, and we think that the sector is positioned to do well in this environment. You know, whereas we are less favorable, if I can get ahead of where you might go with your question, on some of the more defensive sectors like utilities, for example. Now, utilities is a good place to invest if you're looking for a bond equivalent and you're looking for yield in this environment. But we think that those stocks are in that sector tend to be overvalued in many cases. And so, again, sticking with the sector spiders, since they're the large ones in that space, XLU, is the utility sector spider. It has a lot of stocks that we think are overvalued. Companies like Southern, like Dominion Resources, like NextEra Energy. And as such, while there's other factors behind it, we're less enthused about the utility space than we are the technology sector.
Okay. And when you wind up seeing, okay, we're more enthused, we're less enthused, et cetera, how does that affect your portfolio? I mean, does there come a point where you say, I dislike this enough that I got to be out? Or do you wind up saying, I just want to be underweight and I always want to be represented in everything so that I'm properly diversified?
Yeah, from a sector, I'll do it from a sector perspective or a well-diversified, you know, from a regional perspective, looking at either emerging markets or developed international. You know, we think it's very important to be well-diversified across all of the sectors of the U.S. market and across all of the regions from a global perspective to make sure that you're covering your bases and you're diversified so that if something does better than another, you still have exposure to that. But you can tailor your portfolio, tilting it based on certain sectors that you think are going to do better, certain regions that are going to do better, certain geographies or smaller mid-cap perhaps that you think can do better. But you really need to have as a broad a portfolio as possible, because what worked last year isn't working this year, and what worked this year is definitely not going to work next year. There's cyclicality in the overall market, and you want to make sure that you're well exposed to various trends overall. So I'll just take that a little closer to home. Emerging markets was a horrible place to invest in 2015. You know, the average emerging market ETF was down certainly double digits, you know, and in some cases 25% or more. This year, you know, is up double digits in many cases. And one of the ETFs we're highlighting is Spider S&P Emerging Markets Dividend, EDIV. It's an ETF we've been highlighting this month. You know, to bring that home, it declined 27% in 2015, and it's up 17% year to date through, you know, mid-April or so. So you really can see that if you weren't exposed to it based on last year's performance, you'd be missing out on a very strong performing ETF.
Yeah, absolutely. At the same time, you'd have somebody who might say, wow, I dislike that kind of volatility. I mean, right? Wouldn't you have, you know, it's not easy to stomach the ride that you would have gotten last year. You love the bounce back, but for somebody else, that's not necessarily the kind of volatility somebody expects if they're saying, I want to go hold ETFs.
Right. Well, so this is the point of, and this is just one ETF, but emerging markets is a higher risk, higher reward area for investors. The role it can play, it should probably be a relatively small part of someone's well-diversified portfolio combined with more established developed market companies and more established U.S. large cap companies. You know, we typically see this in a smaller portion of someone's portfolio. But yes, if this is the ETF that you hold within your portfolio, or this is your only international equity ETF, then you better be prepared to stomach the risk, because there is going to be volatility in this ETF.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, have you ever looked at an ETF, again, because you're looking at the new things? We've had all of these new fangled, you know, here's what's coming up, here's the latest this and that. Do you ever look at one and say, that's it, that's the structure? Boy, this is it. They've figured it out. I mean, how often when you see a new product, do you actually say, wow, and oh, by the way, have it be a good wow?
So we want to at least get to know the ETF a bit and understand the underlying holdings. But I'll use as a reference point, Goldman Sachs, you know, is one of the firms that's launched these multi-factor smart beta products tied to various fundamental approaches. And there's a U.S. focused ETF called Active Beta U.S. Large Cap. Its ticker is GSLC, George Sam Larry Charles. It's an ETF that launched in September. It's doing well from a performance standpoint. We like the underlying holdings. We cover it today and are telling investors that they should be paying attention to it. It earns our top overweight ranking. And it's a good ETF. It's got 7 months of history, but when we look at the holdings, we feel quite confident on the holdings from a valuation and risk perspective. We don't think investors need to wait 3 years the way that they typically will do for a mutual fund to see how well it's performing. This is a good ETF today, 7 months into its history.
Well, now we're going to find out if you think my audience is interested in good or bad ETFs.
Play Hold It.
You got to know when to hold up.
Or Fold It.
Know when to fold up.
It's Hold It or Fold It time with my guest, Todd Rosenbluth, from S&P Capital IQ. If you want more information, SP Cap IQ on Twitter. I'm sorry, at SP Capital IQ on Twitter. CapitalIQ.com is the website. And Todd's on Twitter. He's at Todd, SP Cap IQ. Hold It or Fold It is where we put our guests to your test. And if you want to participate directly, send your name, your hometown, and the ticker symbols you're interested in to Chuck at MoneyLifeShow.com. Somebody who did just that is Jagdish in Irving, Texas. He wants to know about the Guggenheim S&P 500 Pure Growth Fund. That's RPG.
Yeah, so this is one of our top-ranked ETFs. What it does is take the large-cap growth companies, the most large-cap growth-oriented companies within the S&P 500 index, gets you exposure to some of the more economically sensitive sectors we touched on, like technology and consumer discretionary and healthcare. You know, Facebook, Broadcom, Amazon are three of the top 10 holdings that are all undervalued to us. It's a relatively liquid ETF. This one gets a top ranking from us.
Okay, so that's a buy on RPG, the Guggenheim S&P 500 Pure Growth Fund. Jagdish had another request. This one he shared with Rick in York, Pennsylvania, for the Pure Funds ISE Cybersecurity ETF. That's HACK.
Yeah, so this is a relatively narrowly focused thematic ETF tied to cybersecurity, which has been was a very popular trend last year. The ETF is not performing very well because the stocks inside aren't performing well, and we happen to still think many of them are overvalued. So HACK HACK, we think, is not only expensive but also holds stocks that are not worth having inside your portfolio today.
That was a sell on HACK, the Pure Funds ISE Cybersecurity ETF. Andrew in San Jose wants to know about the DGRO. That's the iShares Core Dividend Growth ETF.
Yeah, so we like this ETF. You're going to get an income component based on companies that have been raising their dividend on a regular basis. The yield's 2.5%, I think, is what it is with stocks that have strong risk characteristics, in our opinion, and in many cases are undervalued, like Johnson & Johnson, Wells Fargo, J.P. Morgan Chase, to name a few of them. This is a really strong ETF to us.
That would be a buy on the iShares Core Dividend Growth ETF, DGRO. Now, that request was from Andrew in San Jose. Sriram, who he's actually no longer in San Jose. He moved to Cupertino, California. But Sriram, who was one of Andrew's recent neighbors, and Mike in Redwood City, California, both wanted to know about the WisdomTree International Small Cap Dividend ETF. That's DLS.
Yeah, so, well, first of all, it's interesting you know where your guests live. That's a good sign into knowing where they are and where your audience is. This ETF gives you income exposure as well, similar to the one we touched on. But we have concerns about it from both a valuation and risk perspective of the underlying holdings. The ETF doesn't trade that frequently, and as such, the bid-ask spread is relatively wide. You know, despite there being $1 billion in assets, there's about 60,000 shares that trade on a daily basis. So we think there's better alternatives in the income space.
So that would be a sell on the WisdomTree International Small Cap Dividend ETF, DLS. And our last request today comes from Joe in Colorado Springs, Colorado, who wants to know about the Fidelity MSCI Healthcare Index ETF, FNLC.
Yeah, so we touched on some of the sector ETFs that are out there. And this is another one that we think is pretty strong. So we like the underlying holdings within healthcare. I touched on Johnson & Johnson earlier and some of the other pharmaceutical companies. This is a relatively low-cost ETF, 12 basis points as well. Healthcare is a sector we like, and this is one of the better ETFs within that healthcare space. So it's a good one.
That's a buy on Fidelity MSCI Healthcare Index, FNLC. And we have to say our goodbyes now to Todd Rosenbluth. Todd, thanks as always for joining me on Money Life.
My pleasure, Chuck. Thanks a lot for having me.
Todd Rosenbluth is Director of ETF and Mutual Fund Research for S&P Capital IQ. Go to CapitalIQ.com for more information. And don't forget to follow Todd on Twitter at Todd SP Cap IQ. We'll wrap things up today by telling you what's coming tomorrow and more right after this message.
PowerShares provides a different take on traditional asset categories while providing advisors and investors with innovative investment opportunities. For more information, go to PowerShares.com. Invesco Distributors, Incorporated.
Welcome back to Money Life. I'm Chuck Jaffe, senior columnist for MarketWatch, host of this show, and a guy who's about to get on the road. Yep, headed down to North Carolina. Looking forward to spending the rest of my week there, although I'm still working. But the show is done. So tomorrow on this show, Sandra Stoutenberg from Investec joins us for our technical difficulties segment. Helen Davis Chapman is our first of two big interviews. She's the author of that J.P. Madoff book I was discussing at the beginning of the show today. Greg McBride will be here from Bankrate.com. And then John Kalamos from the Kalamos Funds. Monday on this show, David Trainer will be in the house. We've got that set up as normal for you. We also have Michael Liersch talking about a brand new survey done by Merrill Lynch. We've got Edward Humes, the author of Door to Door, The Magnificent, Maddening, Mysterious World of Transportation. Really cool book. Really good interview. And Rodney Hobson, the author of The Book of Scams. So that's Monday's show. Tuesday, Jeffrey Salingo, author of There Is Life After College, and Barry James from the James Funds. So great things coming. Just plan to be here. You won't even notice that I'm gone because as far as you're concerned, I won't be. How's that? We also, I think, are about to resolve our issues, fingers crossed, get us back our sounders and some other things. We will then try to freshen things up, give ourselves a new, better sound and some other stuff without adding some things that I know a few of you found annoying. It wasn't necessarily that you disliked our sounders. It was that our sounders were modulated differently and that could create problems. We aren't going to let that come back, I hope, but we'll see, and you'll be in my ears letting me know what you think, good, bad, or otherwise, I am sure. Now, when I get back from North Carolina, if you happen to be curious, on Saturday in the evening, foxsportsgo.com, you can watch the New England Black Wolves playing the Georgia Swarm, and I will be doing the play-by-play. If you, beyond that, by the way, if you still aren't getting enough, well, then check out Wall Street Journal podcasts on Friday. I suspect, although I'm not 100% sure, that I will be on the financial food fight on Friday afternoon. If so, I'll try to tweet about it if I can while I'm away. So there you have it. Thanks so much for living the money life with us. We'll be back tomorrow with another great show, even though I won't be here, but I hope you will be here because we've laid down some great stuff. All right. Again, thanks to my guests, Tom Lydon and Bob Powell, our regulars, Alan Gale, Todd Rosenbluth. Thanks to Rob Floyd, my producer. Thanks to you for being here. Today's Money Life quote of the day comes from David Trainer. Yes, that David Trainer, and he said this on the show. In fact, I think he's actually now said it more than once, but I love this quote. He said, "You can't pay off your debt with non-GAAP earnings. That's not real money." No, it isn't. We hope that you are focused on real money and what you can do with it. And we hope you'll remember that until we do this again the next time, the best thing you can do for your real money and all of your money is to not worry too much about it. Have a great day, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow.
This show is an informational service only. The information provided herein is not to be construed as an offer to buy or sell securities of any kind, and not to be considered a recommendation to buy any stock, but an information resource to aid the investor in making an informed decision. All listeners should consult a qualified professional before trading in any security or pursuing any financial or tax strategy. The information provided has been obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable, but is not guaranteed as to its accuracy or completeness.